Okay, tonight is Wednesday, May 17th. This is the Women's Mishnah and Gemara Shir. We're up to the seventh parak of Maseches Chulin, studying Daf Kuf Zayin Amud Bet this evening. Okay, Rabotai. What?
Age
I know, that's the other page.
Oh, that's the
That's the next page.
Okay.
No, that's the eighth parak of Yuma. I know, because we're doing Chulin. We're in the seventh parak of Chulin, but there's a parallel sugya in Yuma, so I focused that because I wanted to show you what Rabbi Kiveriga said there.
Where is that? I don't.
It's on the back of the page. It's right there. It's the same. Right. So we're starting on the page, which is page one, which is the conclusion of the sugya of Netilat Yadayim. Last week we spent quite a bit of time on the sugya of Mayim Rishonim, Mayim Achronim, Mayim Emtzeiim, that which is obligatory, that which is Rishus, what circumstances it was. We saw the machloikis between Rashi and the Rabbeinu Tam, that where the Rabbeinu Tam is Mechadesh, that if you don't have any real chicken, it's just Tam of chicken, or Tam of meat, that's not considered meat. And only if you have real meat in it, even though there was something that was cooked with meat, if you don't see it, if it got totally absorbed, according to the Rabbeinu Tam, does not make you fleshic.
I like
what?
I like that.
I know, but we don't possibly like the Rabbeinu Tam. I mean, no, I said that.
Like dairy dishes, you know, kalim.
Right, so exactly. We don't paskin like him. But that was the Rabbeinu Tam's chiddush. Today we're going to see the conclusion of the sugya, in which it raises a very interesting question. It's in the middle of the page. I bracketed the words Iboyelahu. A question was asked concerning Netilat Yadayim. Ma'achil Tzorich Netilat Yadayim O Eino Tzorich. If somebody is not eating bread, him or herself, but takes the bread to feed their child, do they require Netilat Yadayim or not? Do they require Netilat Yadayim? So now, without looking at the Gemara, based on the information which we have already posited, based on the reason, the rationale, as to why Chachamim introduced Netilat Yadayim in the first place for bread, how would you go about answering this question?
Yes,
why?
Because you may be passing the Toma.
Good, exactly. We explained that the reason why Shlomo and his Bez Din introduced Netilat Yadayim for ordinary bread was as a protection for Kohanim who were eating Truma. To alert everybody to keep the idea of Taharat HaYadayim fresh in your mind, so that Kohanim, when they eat Truma, they should be very, very cautious. Because the Rabbanan imposed a certain Tum'ah, which is called Tum'at HaYadayim, that our hands are automatically a sheni litumah, if you remember that expression. A sheni litumah. Now, a sheni litumah cannot be mitame ordinary foods. But which foods can an ordinary sheni be mitame? Only truma. Truma can become a shlishi. So before a Kohen handles truma, he must wash his hands to remove the arbitrary tuma assigned by the Rabbanan to everybody's hands. In order to heighten the Kohanim's awareness, the Chachamim made this halacha for anybody who is eating bread. So, if the issue is that your hands will be mitame the bread, so then what difference should it make whether you are eating the bread yourself or touching the bread and holding it to feed your little pisher? What difference?
Go the other way too. In other words, put a child, and we should have to wash a child's hands at any age.
Good.
Because they could get, what
good.
If the child is putting the bread in your mouth the same way?
Good.
The
yes.
Bread, we'd have
yes.
To
that
the
would
hands
be good. Good. That's
or,
a good.
Or what if you're using the bread as an ingredient because you're in the process of making French toast?
Same thing. The question could be asked that way as well. In every way you can ask the same question. Namely, if you're not eating directly, but handling the bread for any reason whatsoever, the Gemara happens to choose to be feeding a child, does it require Netilas Yadayim or not? So let's see how the Gemara proceeds. Toshma, we will quote a braita. Ditani Debei Menashe, it was learned in the school of Menashe, that Rab Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, Rab Shimon Gamliel said, Isha madicha et yada achat bamayim v'notenet pat libna katan. This is talking about Yom Kippur, when you are not permitted to wash your hands. So now the Gemara says that when a mother is feeding her child, she should wash one of her hands, the hands with which she will touch the bread, even though it is Yom Kippur. Why? Because otherwise she's going to pass on that tumah to the bread, and we don't want that. That will discourage people being aware of tum and tahara.
You would think that we would say you can't feed them bread then, because the isser of
but bread is the main part of every meal in the time of the Mishnah. That was the ikar, and if they had a little butter, they were lucky.
Those to compare. Eating the passing your tumah to the bread on one of the five isurim on your kippur, that's a little unusual.
However, it is, that's true. The isur of rechitzat hayadayim is midoraita, according to the Rambam.
You wash your hands after you use the bathroom.
Good, exactly.
If you need to wash your hands, you wash your hands.
Ah, that's going to be Tysus's argument in a minute.
And the question is, why? Is tumah considered lifeless?
No, but you have to go to the bathroom. The kid doesn't actually have to eat bread.
Okay. But there is a rule by washing that the only type of washing that is prohibited on Yom Kippur is considered rechitza shel ta'anug, pleasurable washing. But if there is any other reason for the washing, your hands got dirty. You did an oil change on Yom Kippur. And now you want to come for Yizkor. Which is not impossible. So the guy did an oil change and his hands are full of grease. He's allowed to wash his hands regularly because that's not for pleasure, that's to remove the dirt. You are allowed to do so. So the assumption is that washing to remove the tumah is also not for pleasure and would be permissible. But it's a good question. Amru alav al Shamai Hazaken. It has been said about Shamai Hazaken. Shelo ratza l'ha'achil biyado achat. He, on Yom Kippur, when he was assigned babysitting duty, he refused to feed his kid the bread so that he did not have to wash his one hand. And the Chachamim were concerned, even though he probably arranged for someone else to feed the kid, the Chachamim were worried about the welfare of that child. And they were worried that perhaps he wouldn't be getting anything to eat, because Shammai was such a machmir that he didn't want to wash his hands to feed him the bread. And what did the Chachamim do? V'gazru alav shiya'achil b'shteyadav. They imposed a rule that Mr. Shammai, you have to touch the bread with both hands and wash both of your hands because you are such a stubborn guy and didn't want to feed him with one hand. We're going to make you wash both of your hands and feed your child. You have to feed the kid directly. Don't get anybody else. That's a very unusual piece of legislation, but the Gemara quotes it as proof positive that you're allowed to wash your hands, because they mandated that Mr. Shammai not only wash one hand, but both of his hands. Amar Abaye, Hasam Mishum Shivsa. There was a different concern, Mishum Shivsa. So take a look at Rashi. I should have bracketed it. It's about seven lines from the bottom of the page of Rashi. Hasam mishum shivsa. You know why they made Shammai wash his hands? And why a person who is feeding the baby is allowed, or the child is allowed to wash one hand. You know why? Mishum shivsa, says Rashi, ruach ra'a shore al yodayim shelo natlo shacharis. It's talking about a situation where the mother did not wash her hands in the morning. So if you didn't wash your hands in the morning, what is remaining on your hands from the overnight sleep? A ruach ra'a, evil spirits. Avol natal yodav shachris, but if you washed your hands in the morning, velo nizar bohen, and you just weren't careful the rest of the day until breakfast time, what your hands touched, uba lahaachil et chavero, and now you're coming to feed your friend or somebody else, your kid, ein tsarich netila. Under those circumstances, on Yom Kippur, you would not need netilat yadayim. It's only talking about in a situation where you failed to wash in the morning. But if you did wash in the morning and you remove this shivsa, this ruach ra'a, now we're not going to mandate that you wash your hands on Yom Kippur due to the isur v'chitza, and the rabbinic obligation to wash your hand will be understood that it only applies under what circumstances? When you plan on eating. But the mere fact that you handle the bread, the Chachamim never imposed the obligation to wash for handling bread. They never did. It's only if you eat the bread. However, had you not washed in the morning, then we would, because that ruach ra'a would be transferred to the bread and would put your kid in harm's way. That's what the Gemara answers. And that's how Rashi learns it. So now let's look at on the top of the page.
It's totally independent of whether it's Yom Kippur or not.
What?
This has nothing to do with whether it's Yom Kippur or not.
No. This, of course it has something to do with Yom Kippur. Because there is an Issur Rechitza. During the week, you're right. If you have access to water, you probably should wash your hands, even though you don't have to. You don't have to.
Before giving bread to your child.
That's correct. But on Yom Kippur, when there's an Issur Rechitza, we're certainly not going to allow you to wash your hand if you washed your hands in the morning. Then, when you handle the food for your kid, you're not allowed to wash your hands because it's Yom Kippur. During the week, there's no isur in not washing, so you don't have to. But on Yom Kippur, even if you want to, you're not allowed to because it's not necessary. Not necessary. The halacha doesn't demand washing. So if the halacha doesn't demand washing and you wash, what type of a washing is it? For your pleasure. And that would violate the isur of rechitza on eating of bathing on Yom Kippur, which according to Rambam is an isur d'oraita. According to the Rabbeinu Tam, the only Issur d'oraita on Yom Kippur of the five inuyim is eating and drinking. But all the others, wearing shoes, bathing, anointing, having marital relations, according to the Rabbeinu Tam, they are only Asur midrabbanan. But Rambam believes that all five inuyim are Asur midrabbanan.
Now, we started the conversation talking about the reason that we might have to wash is because we're going to pass on the Tumah.
Right.
But it didn't actually say that in the Gemara, because now we're changing it from Tumah to the Ruach Ra.
No. That this case is talking about the Ruach Ra.
But it didn't say anywhere in the Gemara which one we're talking about.
Correct. But the Gemara assumed that we understood when the Gemara asked the question, do you have to wash Netilat Yadayim because of the Tumah that might be passed on? The Gemara assumes that you remembered, which we discussed a couple of blad ago, or last week, or 2 weeks ago.
Because it comes.
Yeah.
That's not right away afterwards, but that was the last discussion.
That's correct.
So how do you explain the Shammai story?
The what?
The Shammai story with the two hands and washing them both.
Right. So Rashi says that the case was that he failed. Shammai did not wash his hands in the morning. Therefore, there is this ruach ra'a, and we have to make sure to protect the kid. Yes?
Now, what if a woman just gave birth the day before? So she obviously is going to eat, even though it's Yom Kippur.
Right.
She's still not allowed to bathe.
All right, so what's the problem?
Then is she going to wash Mitzvah 99?
No. Well, if she is going to eat bread? Yeah, of course she's going to wash Mitzvah 99. No doubt. No doubt. Yes. So now let's take a look at Tosfos, who has a totally different read of this Gemara. Hasam Mishum Shivsa. Pirish Bekuntris. Ruach Ra'ah. Shore Al Hayadayim Shalom Natlo Shachris. There is this Ruach Ra'ah, evil spirit, that hovers over your hands which were not washed in the morning. For Rabbeinu Tam Mifaresh, de below Nitinat Pat Litinok, Mutar Litol Yadav B'Shachris B'Yom HaKippurim. Rabbeinu Tam says, that's ridiculous. Everybody is allowed to wash their hands Yom Kippur morning. Everybody. Dilogara mimiluch lochos betit ubitsoa. It's not any worse than if your hands are dirty because you came in contact with cement, tit, cement, or tsoa. Somebody spit something on the floor, vomited or something, and you touched it and your hands are dirty, you're allowed to wash your hands on Yom Kippur. De Amrinan, the Gemara in Yuma says, Sherochets kidarko ve'eno choshesh. You wash your hands as usual, and there is nothing to worry about. Ve'ein lecha miluchlochos yoser mizeh. And there is nothing that is more dirty than having this ruach ra'ah on your hands. So therefore, the Chachamim said, every person is allowed to wash your hands. So we're talking about a case where the mother already did wash her hands in the morning. And nonetheless, the Gemara questions whether or not she is permitted or obligated to wash her hands. That's the Gemara's question, knowing full well that there is no Ruach Ra'ah any longer on your hands. Why? Because everybody enjoys the right, and we say the obligation, to wash your hands in the morning after you wake up. Because if you don't wash your hands in the morning, and then you allow this Ruach Ra'ah to remain on your hands, She'ein yachol liga bepiv ube'einav bechotmo ube'azno. That you can't touch your hands, you can't touch your mouth, you can't touch your eyes, you can't touch your nose. Ube'kulu de'be'kulu amrina be'perek shmat shmona shvatzim. The Gemara says about anybody who does not wash their hands, the tikatzeitz yado, let his hand be cut off. Mishum bat melech v'shivsa. There was this special demon called bat melech, and this bat melech would cause lots of problems if your hands touched your eyes, your nose, your ears, if you didn't wash and get this bat melech demon off you. So how do they recommend that you make sure that you don't get this bat melech demon into your nose? Cut your hands off. Unless you wash. So you obviously had to wash. The shivsa dehacha yesh lefaresh kamo shapirish Rabbeinu Chananel shehu ruach ra'ah hashore al ha'ochel kishibo litain hapat latinok ben dalid veheshanim v'choneket oto. It chokes the kid. So in order to get rid of this shivsa, what's the only way that you can get rid of this shivsa? Is by washing your hands. Even though it somehow hovers on the bread itself, but it doesn't get onto the bread unless somebody touches it. So that's what the Rabbeinu Tam said. Im lo natal yadav ba'oso sha'a, afal pisha natal shachris. Even though you washed your hands in the morning, you still have to wash your hands before bread because of this bat melech and what? And shivsa. So the Gemara is now asking, upon whom is the obligation? Is the obligation only upon the one who eats the bread? Or is it associated with anybody who even touches the bread because he's feeding it? So Rabbeinu Tam and Rashi argue, what's the case? According to Rashi, it's talking about you did not wash your hands in the morning. Therefore, there is this concern. According to Rabbeinu Tam, not true. Everybody is permitted to wash your hands in the morning, because otherwise you're putting lots of limbs of yours in danger. So you're allowed to wash your hands. Now, the only question is, do you have to wash a second time before you feed the child? Uma she'ein anu nizharim achshav, and that which we're not particularly careful or worried about, what? Bat melech and shivsa, or any of this stuff. Lefi she'ein osa ruach ra'a mitsuya beinenu. Today, this evil spirit is not prevalent in our communities. We're a little smarter than that, and we know that your hands are not necessarily endangered with evil spirits called bat melech or shivsa. We're a little smarter than that. Kimo she'ein anu nizharin al hazugot. We're not particularly concerned about drinking or eating things in even numbers. Val hagilui. And we're not worried today about leaving a cup of water exposed. We're not worried that a snake put its venom into it. We're not worried about these things today. So we're not worried about the Ruach Ra today, and as a result, nobody pays much attention to this. That's what Tosa said. But nonetheless, we still wash our hands. Even though we're not worried about this Bat Melech and the Shivsa, we still wash our hands in the morning, but for different reasons, not because that your hands are going to communicate this Tumah, which will put various limbs, if you touch those limbs, and the recommendation in the Gemara was to have your hand cut off to make sure you don't touch your nose and your ears and things like that, that we are not worried about at all. So the Gemara thus far seems to indicate that based on the Gzeira with Abaye, that you should wash your hands on Yom Kippur, even if you are only touching the bread to handle it, to pass it to your kid. That's what it seems to indicate. That a mother is allowed to wash one hand, and Shammai was told to wash two hands. So even if it's not Yom Kippur, you still have to wash your hand because you are handling the bread. So would be the appearance of the Gemara thus far. Thus far. However, the Gemara changes his mind based on another story. Back to the Gemara line, fourth wide line, Tashma, the end of the line. Te avua de Shmuel, ashkeche le Shmuel de Kabachi. Shmuel's father came across Shmuel, his son, and he noticed he was crying. Amale, amai kabachis. Why are you crying? Answered Shmuel, de machyan rabbi. My Rebbe hit me. Slapped me. That's what used to happen in elementary schools. Rabbeim used to slap their kids across the face, across the hand. I had a Rebbe in the fifth grade, in the seventh grade in Torah Semis, who used to stick. And if you were out of line, you had to stick out your hand, and he hit you with a big stick. Big stick. Today, you wouldn't get away with that.
Was everybody more well behaved?
Oh, yes. You were terrorized for that stick. Oh, no doubt.
I'm going to say this now. Rebbe said, I can't believe it.
I can knock out all your teeth.
Yeah. They wouldn't have guidance counselors in those days. No diaphragms.
Exactly. That's what happened. Rabbeim hit left and right. Ask the father, am I? Why did your Rebbe hit you? There had to be a reason why your Rebbe hit you. Answers Shmuel, the Amar Li, Because he said to me, Kasafis liberai, velo mashis yadei. You fed another friend of yours bread. And you didn't wash your hands? That's why the Rebbe slapped him. Because he acted inappropriately, didn't know the halacha. So the Rebbe hit him. So listen to Shmuel's father's response. Ve'amailo mashis. So why indeed did you not wash your hands? Amale, so Shmuel said to him, Hu achil ve'ano mashina? He's eating the bread, and I have to wash my hands? That's ridiculous. Amale, so the father said to Shmuel, Lo mistaye delo gamir. It's bad enough that your Rebbe is an Amoritz, that he didn't learn the proper halacha. But mimcha namimach, he hits you for acting appropriately. Bad enough that he was an Amoritz, but now he's using his Amoratzis as an excuse to what? To hit you. You were right, my son Shmuel. You do not have to wash your hands if you're not planning on eating the bread yourself. When you're feeding somebody else, you don't have to. So Shmuel obviously disagreed with the previous story and disagreed with the Braita. Because the Braita was the one that said that a mother should wash one hand on Yom Kippur. Shmuel would say she does not have to wash her hand on Yom Kippur because there is no such takana. The takana for Netilat Yadayim was only if you eat bread, not if you're handling bread. The hilchasa, and the bottom line halacha is, ochel machmas ma'achil tzarech netilas yadayim. If somebody is eating bread and doesn't handle the food, somebody is feeding it to you. So you, the eater, the ochel, have to wash your hands, even though you're not touching the food. Ma'achil eino tzarech netilat yadayim. But the person who is feeding you does not require netilat yadayim. And there is no logic to this, other than the fact that that was the takana of netilat yadayim. When Shlomo Ubeit Dino, who created the mitzvah midrabanan of netilat yadayim, they formulated and said, anybody who eats bread has to have netilat yadayim. They never said anybody who handles the bread. Therefore, the halacha is, if you're eating it because you are being fed, you have to wash your hands because you are eating bread. Even though you're not touching it. And the concern of the original takana doesn't have any application if you're not touching the bread. But that's the takana. It's eating bread requires netilat yadayim. And ma'achil, despite the fact that he is touching, does not have to have netilat yadayim due to the fact that that's not part of the takana. So whenever you have a takana, you have to read the takana properly, and you can't read into it situations which do not exactly cover and specified by the takana, by the person who is misaking that takana. Yes?
So the implication is that if you're preparing the food, you're not going to pass on the tumah? That's irrelevant?
It's irrelevant.
Because the takana is made...
Correct.
Just as a fence to...
Correct. So in all probability, if your hands are deemed as a sheni latumah, it will be mitame the bread. So if he's a kohen, it will. But, so now, midrabanan, this bread is tame. That's correct. So...
And on Yom Kippur, there would be no chance that there would be any connection to the Kohan. They'd be in the Beit HaMikdash doing the Avoda, whatever.
No, not every Kohen is in the Beit HaMikdash. You know, the Kohanim, there were lotteries. They were divided into 24 Mishmarot. Uh-huh. So each group got only 2 weeks a year to work. And Yomim Tovim time. All Kohanim were on duty on Yomim Tovim because there was a lot of volume. But during the year, there wasn't that much volume, so they didn't need all the Kohanim. All the Kohanim were basically teachers. That's what they did most of the year. And 2 weeks a year, you did your Toranut in the Beit HaMikdash. And even then, when you had a group, they used to take lots to determine who did each activity. You could go 2 weeks and never have your name called by the lottery.
So it could possibly affect them on Yom Kippur.
Yes, it is possible. If you're, yeah, if you were home. Right. Exactly. Yes, if you're in the Mikdash, unlikely. Right. But that's another machlokes. That's machlokes the Rambam and the Ritva. Who? What exactly did the Kohen Gadol do on Yom Kippur? The Ritva believes that the Kohen Gadol only did the special avodah of Yom Kippurim. That's all he did. All the other Kohanim did the regular active, like the daily sacrifice and things like that. The Rambam says no. The Kohen Gadol did everything from the beginning to the end, all avodas hayom, until after the avoda into the Kodesh HaKadoshim was done by the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur, and no Kohen Hedyot worked at all on Yom Kippur. That's the Rambam Shita. And that's what it appears if you look at your Machzor carefully and read either Amitz Koach or Atakonanta, which is even a little more accurate. And apparently the Atakonanta, which is the Nusach Sfard version of the Avodah, was apparently authored by a Kohen Gadol. And it's not in very poetic form, as Amitz Koach was written by Hakalir, the great Paitan. So he did it in poetic form, but wasn't as careful indicating various halachot. The other version is much more detailed in terms of the Avodah, but less poetic in terms of its presentation. And the Atakonanta and the Amitz Koach both follow the Rambam Shita because they both describe the Kohen Gadol doing everything on that particular day.
He washed his hands.
So if it was,
what?
He washed his hands.
Ten times. Went to the mikveh five times.
Right.
And did...
Hands and legs. That's correct.
Ten times. Yes.
If we have a document that presumably was written by a Kohen Gadol, wouldn't that reflect the reality?
Yeah. Yes. We're not sure. The historians think it was written by a Kohen Gadol, but they have no proof positive. But it certainly would indicate the reality of what was done by... That's correct. Right.
But it follows what, the Rambam...
Follows the Rambam that
well,
he...
Well, the Rambam follows the document. I mean, if it was written by a Kohen Gadol...
That is correct. The Rambam follows the document. Right. That's correct. Right. Right? And even if it was Kalir, it's Rambam... Kalir was probably around 6th, 7th century. Rambam would be following him too. Not only if it's the Kohen Gadol, the Rambam may have taken a gloss at the Avodas Yom Kippurim and said, yeah, yeah. But that's the Rambam paskins that way. And says the Ritva says it's recommended, but he said he didn't have to. And in practice, the Ritva did not feel that the Kohen Gadol did everything. Only the special Avodat Yom Kippurim, which was unique to which we read about 2 weeks ago in Parshas Achrimos. Yeah. Yeah. Now, this happens to be the halacha. Even though, and this is very unusual, when we have the Gemara citing a braita indicating one opinion, that you have to wash, and then Shmuel, an Amoraic sage, indicating you don't have to, you normally paskin like a braita against Shmuel, who's an Amora. But the halacha happens to be, as the Gemara says, behilchata. That is the bottom line halacha. And that's the way the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch code it. And that's our practice. You handle bread, you're making French toast for your kid, or grilled cheese. Nobody washes their hands because they're handling the bread. The kid who eats it has to make Alofinos Yadayim. Yeah. Yeah. Now, turn the page for just a moment. Turn the page... And towards the bottom, there is something which says Gilyon Hashas. I bracketed it. You see that?
Yes.
Towards the bottom, Gilyon Hashas.
Yes.
That is Rabbi Kiveger. Rabbi Kiveger's commentary on the Gemara is called the Gilyon Hashas. And if you... to know when Rabbi Kivega makes a comment on the word which he's going to comment, the printers of the Gemara put a little circle in the Gemara or the Rashi or the Tosfot upon which Rabbi Kivega is going to comment. So if you look at the Tosfot on the page on the top right, seven lines from the bottom, what does Tosfot say? Kishiba litain patlatinok ben dalet vehe shanim. Who would you be feeding on Yom Kippur? A 4 or 5 year old kid who's not allowed to fast. Doesn't only mean a 4 or 5 year old kid. So there's a little circle next to the word ben dalet vehe. You see that on the top of the word ben? That is an indication that you should look at the Gilyan Hashas, because Rabbi Kivega is going to make a comment. So I bracketed his comment on Tosvot Dibur HaMaschel Mishum Shivsa, on the phrase Ben Dalid Vehe Shanim Vechon Kaso, that if you touch your hand, if you touch the bread without washing your hands in the morning, what happens to the bread? It'll choke the kid. Okay? Now he is going to quote Be'aruch Isa. There is another Rishon known as the Aruch. He's quoted by Tosfos several times throughout Shas. And the Aruch is a very famous for many halachot. I'll give you it a little later. He's not quoted often, but usually when he's quoted, the halacha follows him.
That's not the Aruch HaShulchan.
No. Aruch HaShulchan lived in the 20th century. Yes, and he is a late Achron who did a survey of Shulchan Aruch, and instead of, as Karo gave no sources, he gave every single available source on the topic with Shulchan Aruch. That's the Aruch HaShulchan. He's generally a Mekel, so he's a good sefer to acquaint yourself with, not a Machmer. But Aruch Isa, in the Aruch it says, Mi ben bet chadoshim ad zayin shanim. This Shivsa attacks children who are 2 months old until 7 years old. Adzayin shanim. V'haruach ra'ah ochezet hatinok b'tzavaro b'mafreket b'gidim sha'achorei hatzavar. How does this demon attack? It attacks the veins that are behind your neck, in the back of your neck. That's what it attacks. Umyabeshet otam. And it dries out your vein. Now, if your vein dries out, what's going to happen? Your blood can't circulate. Umis nava. And what happens to you?
He's like pale. He gets white.
You get very pale and white. V'holeich ad shiyamut, until you die. Umama hi b'sha'a umima hi. How does it ultimately get contracted? B'sha'a she'imo ba'a mi beit hakisei o minahar umeineket libna la'altar. When the mother comes from the bathroom or from the river, and she doesn't wash her hands before she nurses her child. So this particular demon, that's how it's contracted, and until you wash your hands, it's never going to get you're never going to get rid of it. So the Aruch claims it. Number one, it starts a lot earlier in a kid's life. It's Bet Chadoshim, and extends until age 7. And he tells you exactly how it works. Somehow dries out your veins and.
You could translate it to some bacteria, obviously.
That's right.
The Aruch Ra'ah doesn't have to be.
Yes, that's true. It could be some type of bacteria which you pick up in the bathroom, in the bathhouse.
Or in the Nahara.
Or a Nahara, in a river. A polluted waters.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Very, very simple. That is correct.
It's like a pre-medicine thing. Probably not until 2 months because they have enough antibodies, whatever it is, in the body from the mother. And not after 7 because you're old enough to fight it. I mean, it's probably
right.
Not.
That's you're not being nursed at that point.
Right?
It probably was.
Right.
Why did it take those ages?
Said me naked, too.
Yeah. Okay. Let's go back to the Gemara. And the next Mishnah picks up on something that we already spent quite a bit of time on, concerning dairy and milk, going back to Basa B'Chalav. And the next Mishnah, which we'll do, will cover really one of the main criteria where a drop of milk falls onto a piece of meat that's cooking in a pot. What happens? Those are the real technical halachot of kasher. So the Mishnah says, Tzorer adam basar ugvina b'mitpachat achat. You're allowed to wrap meat and cheese in one napkin. Ubilvat shelo yinogin zebozeh. As long as they're not touching one another, that's okay. You can wrap them together. Rab Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, Shnei Achsenoin, two people at an inn or a hotel, you know, Motel 6, who they left the light on for him, Ochlin al Shulchan Echad, are allowed to eat at one table, Ze Basar, Ve Gvina, Ve'ein Choshishin. They can eat meat and milk at the same table. Two guests, the Gemara will say, it's two guests who don't know each other. So if they don't know each other, what are they likely not to do?
Share
their meal. Exactly. But if they are makirin ishechad, they cannot sit together unless there is a heker reminding them that one is eating meat and one is eating cheese. Asks the Gemara, V'chi nogea ze baze, my heaven. What could possibly go wrong, even if the cheese touches the meat? Heve tsonon bitsonon hu.
It's cold and cold.
No transfer of taste can take place between cold and cold. You always need the medium of heat. So why does the Mishnah insist that they don't touch each other? And Amar Abaye, so Abaye answers, Nehi diklipa lo ba'i. It is true that you don't have to scrape off any part of the meat or any part of the cheese because you assume, according to certain conditions, which we will learn, that the flavor transfer only remains on the surface. It does not go onto the inside. So under certain conditions, the only thing that you have to do is what? Cut off a thin slice of the surface. So when you have tsonon b'tsonon, you do not have to do that. Because there is no transfer of taste whatsoever. But hadacha bilobai? But if they touched each other, does it not at least have to be rinsed off? Of course it has to be rinsed off. Why does it have to be rinsed off? Because maybe some of the meat, or there was a transfer, and not of taste, but rather what?
The
actual meat thing. And then you take a bite of the other one, and you're eating milk and meat together. So as a result, in order to avoid having to wash it off, what's the provision that the Mishnah made in which you wrap it with the same napkin? Shelo yehun nogin zebozeh. But if they were no geya zebozeh, you must necessarily wash both of them in order to take this precaution. And nobody disagrees with this. Rab Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, Shnei Achsinoin Ochlin al Shulchan Echad. Two guests are permitted to eat on one table. Omar Rav Chanan Bar Ami, said Rav Chanan Bar Ami, Omar Shmuel, in the name of Shmuel, Lo Shanu, this has only been stated, Ella She'ein Makirin Ze'etzeh. It's only where the two guests do not know one another. Aval Makirin Ze'etzeh Asur. But if they know one another, then they are not permitted to eat at the same table, Basar and Mechalav. Tanya Mihachi. We have learned a brisa supporting Rab Shimon Gamliel's opinion. Rab Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, Bet Achsinaim, Shinis Archul Pundik Echad. Two guests came to the same hotel. Echad zeba min atzafon, one came from the north. Vezeba min adarom, one came from the south. Zeba bechati chaso, this one came with his piece of meat. Vezeba begvinato, this guy came with his cheese. Ochlin al shulchan echad, zebasar vezegvina ve'ein choshishin, and we have nothing to worry about. Why? Because if one came from the north, one came from the south, they probably don't know each other. Don't know each other. Velo asru ella bitfisa achas. The prohibition is only when they are not together, held, wrapped together. Asks the Gemara, Tfisa achas salkedaitach? What do you mean, wrapped together? If it's wrapped together, then you can't eat it together, even if it's not on a table. You can't eat it at the same time, even if it's not at the same table. And one is eating, if they're wrapped together, what are you talking about? Of course you can't eat them without at least rinsing it off. Ella ke'ein tfisa achas. What does it mean? Ke'ein tfisa achas. That two people are allowed to eat at the same table, even if they know one another, as long as there is something that serves as a heker in between.
That's what happened to me.
As long as it's not wrapped together, so it's separate, and there's a distinct recognition, something is on the table that ordinarily would not be on the table, which now serves as the distinguishing feature. This guy's eating meat, this guy's eating cheese. Now, what do you do when you have, like every family has, you made a heck of a dinner, and one of your kids says, I want... Wacky Mac. One of my grandchildren, that's all he eats every, no matter what my daughter makes, that's all he eats is Wacky Mac. So they're having meat and he's sitting there. What do you do? So now Tosis is going to say, if you have a placemat or a separate table, that's okay, that's enough. Let's read the Tosis, the second Tosis. I bracketed the relevant line. Ulefikach nohagin akshav, therefore we are of the habit today, kishze ochel basar vze ochel gvina al shulchan echad, manichin lohem, we manichin lechem, you put a loaf of bread on the table, o kankan, or a pitcher, o sha'ar kelim, or some other utensil, lehafsik binetayim, in order to what?
Separate
them. O ochel al mapa acheret, or one of them is eating on what? On a separate placemat. Deheve ke'ein shtei tfisot. It's as if they are wrapped separately in two different wrappings. And there's no concern under those circumstances that there will be a remind, that they will fail to remember that this guy is eating Wacky Mac, when everybody else is eating Meatballs and spaghetti.
That's your question.
Yeah. Yes.
Thank you. When it says manichim lechem, would they be able to both eat from that bread?
No, this is bread that they're not eating.
Not eating at all.
I know, but the fact that they use lechem as an example.
Yes, they can.
Think that.
Yes, you can eat that bread. You can have bread which is for dairy and for meat, as long as if you cut it with any knife, that's clean. That's all. If you cut it with any knife that's clean, you can use that bread for both dairy and.
Yes.
Now, there is an opinion in Shulchan Aruch that says that whenever you place a loaf of bread on the table and you used it for fleishik, let's say, you should not use that same loaf for what? For dairy at the next meal.
You have a child left over from Shabbos lunch, you can't use a Shabbos.
That's what some people say, and some people do. When I learned Yoredeya in YU, so I had, of course, Rabbi Weiss, like everybody else had for 50 years, Rabbi Weiss for Yoredeya, he said, that's not just a chumrah, that's required al pidin. You must, you cannot eat that bread. The Shulchan Aruch does quote it, others disagree. But, so the answer is you can, even though the practice is, according to many, not to do so. That if one guy cuts the bread and he's going to use it for meat, the other guy sitting there at the table eating cheese cannot, even on his own thing, cannot go ahead and use that loaf of bread. Some people will have, Rabbi Weiss at times said, you need separate bottles of ketchup for dairy and meat. You know, he went like crazy. You know, who has separate bottles of ketchup for dairy and for meat? Because he kept saying that if you're going to pour the ketchup and the meat is hot, so that the vapor goes in, it makes it fleshy, that's almost impossible. Tell you the truth. Yes.
Now, the two examples, why are they giving both examples? The first one says if they don't recognize each other, they don't know each other, then it's okay for them to share the same table. Then it goes on to say if one came from the north and one came from the south.
That's just an example if they don't know each other. That's the Bryce's language. The Gemara is just quoting the Brisa to support Rav Shimon Gamliel's opinion and Shmuel's revision. Rav Shimon Gamliel said two guests who are allowed to what? Eat at the same table. He didn't say that they didn't know each other. That was Shmuel's addition. So now the Gemara cited a Brisa as proof text that Shmuel was right. The Brisa happened to illustrate it, one guy from the north, one guy from the south. Yes.
When Tosfos gives us the two options, to use separate cloths.
Correct.
Or to put bread and a
or utensil on the same tablecloth.
Right. So those are, as you said, things that wouldn't be eaten, or they just happen to be neutral, neither milk, neither dairy,
no.
Neither meat, so they could...
In all the Mefarshim say it has to be something that customarily would not have been on the table. Otherwise, how does it serve as a heker?
Wait, so bread is customarily on the table.
No, but for this meal, it was not scheduled to have the bread on the table. Not in the bag or something.
Was there ever?
Right.
That's unusual because the same bread was their staple.
Okay, I understand. But they would have the bread, you know, cut up, and this guy ate it and had his own bread by him. And so here it meant that you took the whole loaf and put it in the table. Usually you didn't have the whole loaf sitting on the table. Whatever it means. But it means something that is not customarily on the table, because otherwise it doesn't serve as the heker. Amale Rav Yemar Bar Shlamya Le'abaye Shnei Achin Umakpidin Ze Al Ze Mahu. Two brothers who don't talk to each other. They're sitting there at the table, and they are makbid, they would never share each one's food.
So it's not that they don't know each other.
Ah, so they do know each other.
Right.
Are they allowed to sit at the table without a heker?
Because they don't speak to each other.
Because they don't speak to each other, and they're not going to share.
Well,
strangers
to each other.
No, because they might make up
a bad meal. So the Gemara will establish the following principle. Then I'll tell you the inside. Here is the following principle. The principle is, if some outsider were to look at the table, what would that outsider identify?
Two brothers.
What assumption would the outsider make about two brothers? That they're talking to each other. So therefore, he will make the erroneous conclusion that everybody is allowed to eat milchik and fleishik at the same table, even if the people know each other. So hold on 1 second. Hold on 1 second. It's a Maris Ayin question.
But you see two people sitting near each other and they don't talk to each other or interact. You don't assume they're brothers. You assume they don't know each other.
Correct. But if I knew they were brothers, I know they're brothers.
Okay.
And they're sitting there. You just don't know that what? That they're angry with one another.
Okay.
So this principle is established in Masechet Pesachim in the following case. There were people who were baking matzahs, And they wanted to put a design on the matzah. A design on the matzah. And the Chachamim said, you shall not do so, because we're afraid by the time you start faputs in the design, what's going to happen? It's going to be chametz. There was this baker, his name was Baitus, who made a form where he can just stamp the matzah with the design, and it takes 1 second. So he asked if he could put his design on his matzah baking products. And the Chachamim said no. Why? Because when you look at the design, you don't know it's this guy's unique pattern. And then what are you going to make a mistake? That you're allowed to even do it by hand. So you see that there is a principle that where an outsider can make a mistake and lead to an isur, we do not allow the person even doing it beheter to what? To do it. Same thing the Gemara will say here. That somebody who, if there are two brothers, some outsider is going to make a mistake and think that these two brothers are regular two brothers, or at least are casual to one another and talking to one another. Under those circumstances, he'll make a mistake and say, you're always allowed to eat bread and milk and meat together at the same table. And that's halachically wrong. So to protect that halacha, even if these two brothers are angry at each other and would not share, there's got to be a heker between them as well. Then the Gemara will quote a third case, which initially it thought was permissible, and the Gemara says it should be prohibited. The Gemara is going to say that it's permissible. Here is the case. You know that you're not permitted to do laundry on Chol HaShamoed. However, if somebody only has one shirt, one pair of pants, the halacha, and it got dirty, the halacha says he is allowed to wash that garment on Chol HaShamoed. Ask the Gemara, why? Somebody who passes by and sees you doing the laundry, he's not going to know that this was your only the only thing. How's he going to know that?
Because you're standing there doing laundry in your underwear.
almost answers the Gemara. Because normally when somebody is doing laundry, he wears his regular clothing. And at the time that people wore the Roman togas, and they always had their gartel on as well. When you had a toga, you wore a gartel. So when, if you were wearing your gartel, everybody would be able to figure that what? You have other clothing. And they know you're not allowed to wash your clothes. But if you only have one toga, so when you wash the toga, what do you have to take off? You have to take the gartel off also. So you're not wearing your gartel. Once you're not wearing your gartel, because you're probably going to wash that too, therefore, everybody understands that under those circumstances, why are you washing the toga and your gartel? Because you don't have any others. So there, the Gemara did not apply, and they figured the passerby will figure it out. But if the passerby will not figure it out, such as by the shape and form of the decorated matzos, or in our case, the basa b'chalav of two brothers, not knowing that they were enemies, under those circumstances, the chachamim make the gzeira uniform across the board, and you may not violate that, even if in your specific situation it does not apply. And this is a rule which we find quite frequently, that Chachamim apply something because of Marasayim, because the oncomer will make a mistake. The source of the halacha is a Mishnah in Maseches Beitza, where somebody had chickens in little cages. And he goes by one of the chickens on the first day of Yom Tov. He said, that white one up there, that's going to be my lunch. Okay. Now he can't reach it. So he's carrying a ladder to walk up the ladder and take out the chicken to shecht it for lunch. But somebody who sees him carrying a ladder thinks that what? He's doing construction. Because that's when you carry ladders around. So the Chachamim said, you're not allowed to carry a ladder even in your backyard. Because somebody might see it and misinterpret what you're going to do and think that a malacha, which is usur, is suddenly muteris. So that's a principle which the Gemara applies dozens of times, Mishum Marasayim, and here are two illustrations in our Gemara. All right, we'll stop here. We'll continue next to Bach. Yes. I know. And I can tell you, you can't make up Marasayim. There are no guides. I told you that. Because I need to make up 50,000 things. Right? That's correct. Yes. Correct. So the Chacham never prohibited
it. Oh, how wonderful. What is it? Yeah, November 24th. That's great. Enjoy.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
We're going up to Israel for 2 weeks. We have a wedding.
Oh, beautiful. Mazal tov. You'll be there for Yom Yerushalayim. Wow. Gevaldik. Gevaldik. Thank you. You too. You too. Take care.
Good night. Thank you.
Good night. Good night.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah.
I didn't think this was important to ask, but Bernie suggested I ask. They found that I am missing some bone in my jaw. There's some material that they were going to biopsy that was cancerous. We're going on the assumption that it's not. And if it is not, they're going to be taking bone from the cadaver to build that up. And then eventually it'll be like a scaffold in which my own bone will then grow in, and then they can put some in there. So the dentist had let me know that there's actually an issue with using cadavers. But there are three reasons that there would be an issue. One was, I don't remember all three offhand. One was I'm not offering
meds. I know, but for this, we do that all the time when you harvest organs.
So it's not. I mean, I was assuming that they have to do this all the time.
They do. And so, that's a serious thing.
Right.
100%. That's an honest.
I didn't think it was.
Under normal circumstances, we believe not to be nana from the mace. But for medical reasons, we do it all the time.
There were two other
with
reasons.
Everything.
But apparently,
we take eyes, we take everything.
Yeah.
Any organ
so
that we
not,
can
so
use, we can
non-ish.
Rescue. It's a non issue.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes.
I saw my oncologist on Monday, and she said that I do not have to come back.
Great. Oh, that's the best news in the world. That's fantastic.
Yes, I agree.
I came to you in the hospital, and I heard what everything happened. And I tried to call you that time, and then you were part. But we have a very difficult story, and we don't usually do help.
So come tomorrow.
Whatever time I could come, because I'm not in the same. I will come from the
No, I have to double marrow now. Yeah.
What time?